very sorry about this. Okay, we are trying to have an interview with Father Tongay at the Oblate Center in Whitehorse. This is Helen Dobrowolski talking to Father Tongay about the Catholic Church in the Yukon in the 1930s and 40s. And in our first start in this interview, Father Tongay has been telling me about how he came from St. Rosalie, Quebec.
That's
in 1944. And a little bit about the structure of the apostolic?
The vicariate, yeah.
And I'm sorry to ask you to say this again, but if you could just summarize how it started with the Athabasca Mackenzie.
Yes, it was first who belonged to the Athabasca Mackenzie, and with the growth and the thought, some of the mission was this, the move to Gruard and some others with the opening of the BC coast. The other part was belonging to Prince Rupert. And they used to call it Prince Rupert and Yukon. So therefore, in those days, we had no communication. We were severing all the communication with the Mackenzie and with the Gruard. But in 1936, Bishop Coudet was named assistant to the vicar apostolic of the Bishop Bunos, and they called him a coadjutor also.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll have the title, we will take over after his death, I guess. But he made several visits. He went to visit the existing mission, like the Telegraph Creek. In those days, it was Telegraph Creek and Dees Lake and McDame, in the waterway from the Stikine and up, and two lower posts. And in 1935, Father Allard drowned in the along the Dees. And that was changed all the mission, and some other recruit who came from the south too, from Prince Rupert. So Bishop visited all those missions, and in the new bishop, because he was on the 36, I guess, when he was named, a bit more. And he visited all the Yukon, Dawson, and Mayo. And there was not much more. There was a White Horse and Carcross, and he had gone from there to Atlin. So he had a good view. And at the same time, in 39, he saw the coming of the Alaska Highway, and what all the work it created. We needed more missionaries on the Alaska Highway, and at that time also. They built a mission in Lower Post. There was something existing before, because it was visited by Telegraph Creek, but there was no buildings, so the bishop and a few fathers to come there, and they started the mission at Lower Post in 37. And then in 38, I will check the dates after.
So when he first came up here, the only missions that were operating were Whitehorse, Dawson. Did you say there was one in Carcross as well?
Yes, there was a little. They were visiting Carcross because there was another mission at Atlin. So
they combined the two,
and sometimes it was Carcross, because they had the train.
Mm-hmm.
They could visit easily on the train from Whitehorse too. And the one going on a boat, it was just Dawson along at the end of the road. And the Mayo was when they started mining, and from 36, 39. They were contacted also by Fort Norman or Fort Good Hope, because many of the native came that way to the Yukon.
Right.
So quite a few were baptized in the Good Hope. So therefore there was, and with the miners, there's always Catholic from all over the world coming.
Mm-hmm.
So he started to build in Mayo. So, but he was very, very interested in developing those missions, especially when he saw the growth, so many coming in the Yukon. And after a few years, he was determined to ask the neighbors if it could be a better division to look after those people here a bit as a permanent fashion instead of just visiting a few times a year. And that's where the idea grew. And in 44, they divided the other diocese, and they created the Diocese of White Horse. And it was official in January 44, and then the bishop was installed here officially just at the end of October. That's all in 44. And so that, and Father Joseph Forget and I came on that year, so we were the first priests of the Diocese of White Horse in those days.
And you were both from Quebec?
Yes, the other one was from Ontario, I guess, just close to the border there.
Yes, but we were, yeah, and you were mentioning earlier that before that the Oblates recruited most of their priests from France.
France. All the north were, like the Hudson, Peter Mackenzie, they were all coming from France. So they were pretty good with the languages too. So because in most of the places outside of the Yukon, it was the only place where they were not all talking their languages.
Mm-hmm.
This I could explain for hours on that part, because see, even for the Hudson Bay, if they like in a big reserve in say Fort Simpson or Resolution or Fort Providence, were Catholics, the Hudson Bay, when they were sending a manager for the store, they saw that this fellow will be speaking the native language. Otherwise, they were not qualified.
It would be hard to do business.
Yeah. Because they were so numerous, and they were all talking their own language. But see, in the Yukon, after the gold rush, they saw that that it would be better to speak English, and so they can understand everything. So, but here they were not talking as much, except like in the south in Fort Nelson, they were speaking the slave there, and in the Yukon, those coming from Northwest Territory, they insisted on now having their language too, like at Mayo, in Dawson they had the same when they were a group important. But most of the bishop, after a few trips around and visiting the mission on his own, he saw fit to rebuild and rearrange the diocese and bring it to normal communication. Even though then in 44 it was just the Alaska Highway. Before that was all rivers. It was from the Stikine up to the Telegraph and Dease Lake and MacDame and Lower Post. It was a long way to come to Lower Post.
Oh, I can imagine.
And in that division also, Fort Nelson, all that the district of Fort Nelson came in there. And then on the west coast, it would be the Telegraph Creek, Iskut Lake. We had a few outposts from Telegraph. It was they called Caribou Hide and the Highland Post. Mm-hmm. They were going close to the Finley River. But the bishop was traveling from Smithers or Fort St. James on a horseback or boat. He met quite a few of those people.
So this was Bishop Coudert?
Coudert.
Yeah.
So he was traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. Because after the accident of when the drowning of Father Allard, Bishop Buenos lost lots of his vigor there, because he was there. He was with him in the boat, and he saw him hit a tree, hit him, and he didn't know nothing about a boat, you know. So he spent nearly 2 days on the drift pile himself. So after that, he was really affected, and he wanted to retire. Though he died only in 45. And then the bishop was really interested, and especially with the influx of people with the Alaska Highway, he saw fit to rebuild to start many other missions. Those, like Teslin, was started in 38. Just about the right time, you know.
Yes, but in strategic location.
In 38, it was coming from Lower Post would be by dog team or by plane. There was no direct communication. And even here, from here to White House, if you come to White House and go to Teslin, that'd be on the river. So that's an awful long time, too. So, but he saw that everything was coming out. Like in the West also, there was quite a few he had met were interested in helping. And with the coming on the Alaska Highway, it was much easier. Like Burr Washer opened nearly right away in 44, just after the Pioneer Road. And then all those missions would come. That's why here I have a graphic, not a graphic, but a resume of Bishop Couder himself. You see, in 1938, there was a mission, like the years are pretty hard, because sometimes the priest will be there for a couple of years and then he'll come and open the mission officially. Sometimes they give the date of the mission when it was founded or when it was blessed officially, you see. So, like here I have at Dees Lake, St. Mary Magdalene, and the Holy Family at Lower Post in 1935. In 1938, the mission of Christ the King in Mayo. 1939, see, the Father Dreen was in Teslin in 1938, but in 39 they had the first church was built, and so officially this the years 1939 when it was started, and the also a few years before, when the bishop had gone down to Dawson, he realized that the one of the first little church we had on the river was Fort Selkirk. That was built by the army in 98.
When the field force went
through. Field force came out, and they had a chaplain with them. He was not an oblate, but he came to White House. He was one of the parish priests in White House.
I think they were only there for a very short time. In the summer.
But at the same time, we still had a property there in Fort Selkirk.
That's right.
So the bishop went there in 42, and right away he sent Father Bavelier to start to renew this, revive the mission of. And in 1943 and 44, he worked on the Fort Nelson, you see, because it was already in the making, but Father Levac was there. So he went, especially in 44, he went to visit the place and give him the okay for building another little church and all this. So everything went quite fast, you see, like... The old mission in Fort Nelson was across the river. It was just where the trading post was for years. And then they built a new mission because Father Levac had the benefactors, and they asked to change the name to Our Lady of Snows. See, Bishop Couder didn't like that because he was really, when the tradition was there, it's the old mission St. Paul's, and it was coming because of those. Then, you see, like at the airport at Watson Lake, there was quite a group of soldiers and airmen from the state in Canada. And this mission, St. Peter's mission, was started.
I don't know. That was also in 44?
It was built in 44, but officially I think it was started in 45. You see, but it was, when I came to 44, the mission was, the chapel was all built up, and you had quite a few followers there.
Who was the first priest there?
That's Father Poulet.
Poulet.
He's in Fort Nelson yet. He's about 77 and he's still going strong.
All of you people seem to keep going forever.
You see, he was in charge of a lower post, but when the highway came out, he went to Watson Lake. And even he was always traveling between the two, because for him, 23 miles didn't take long.
So how would he have traveled? This would have been by boat, or
no? Then it was
by that time the highway was.
Yeah, and the mission was officially opened in 39 in Teslin, but in 45, 46 they built a new rectory, and then it was a center. Because from Teslin, they'll reach the Undercanal Road was built, so they could send somebody to the Undercanal.
That's still a lot of traveling.
But that's amazing.
Well, I guess that was the story of those days. Yes. I remember Father Bob used to go right from La Barge to Stewart Island, I think he said, and even Dawson in the summertime. Yes.
And you see, after that, with his boat on a Pelly, he'll go as far to McMillan and the Ross River.
Yeah, that's quite a...
That's quite a little trip. And in 45, they founded the mission in 44 at even some places. See, he made a few trips in 42, in the fall 42, and... but the mission was built in 44 and opened in 45 at Carmax. And at the same,
so this was the one in four, the first one in Carmax would have been built by Father Bob then.
Yes, the log cabin. I got picture of all those because I was in Carmax myself for 15 years, and 17 years in Teslin. And the first few years I was at Telegraph Creek and then at Fort Nelson. In 1947 there was in 44 also, that was not in there, I skip it I guess. He built Father Morissette. Mm-hmm. Where, he was in charge of the district of Burwash district. With the American Army, all of them, they became chaplain of the Alaska Army also. See, for the American and Canadian, so they were allowed to travel with the army vehicles and all things. They had even a driver most of the time.
So they were traveling with the army, but at the same time establishing mainly Native missions.
Yeah, but see, that came as a sideline when they saw the best places. And especially in Burwash, there the Incluani Lake, they had the Jaco there. They were French. And right away they were interested in having a mission. I think even at the beginning, I just wonder if they didn't give a piece of land for the first time.
I think I heard that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't the church in Burwash moved? It was built in one place and then went somewhere else or something like that?
Because I know I vaguely, I didn't dig those things, but I vaguely remember this.
Yeah.
And see, in that district also, Father Morris had worked really hard because he built Burwash, because it was quite a settlement there, and then he was traveling even to Ashiak, see the canyon, and to Ashiak, and then they had a little mission there. Mm-hmm. Later they opened Snag.
Yeah,
they close the air ranch there, the radio station they had there, weather station. And so he had another building there.
Oh, so there was actually a church at Snag.
Snag, oh sure, that's interesting. Some are not there anymore, but see, like in 47, I helped him to start another one at Champagne.
I think that one's still standing. It's
pretty sick.
I think all the buildings at Champagne are kind of.
Yes, it's a nice location to, and later on he will, with the building of the Haines Road, that he will open Haines Junction. So I put a few nails on that one too.
Oh, that's a lovely little building. I like the one in Haines Junction.
And so that gave you a good idea that it was moving in those days.
Yes. So the one in Haines Junction would have been built also about the late 40s, or?
Yeah, I don't remember. Let's see if I get it here. I took some other notes here, Haines Junction. Coming up, I guess, yeah. Haines Junction. Hello. I have to dig out in some of the book.
Okay, well, let's take a pause.
Yes, you better.
Okay, that's no problem.
Yes.
So you were mentioning, and about the same time, the church at Upper Liard was built in 55, or finished in 55.
Yes, you see, like, after that, when the American army left, and the Canadian took over the airport at the Watson Lake, there was less people, but the same in those days there was nobody on the highway. It was all military. There was nobody at Watson Lake. There was nobody at Fort Nelson on the road.
And then they suddenly had these instant huge communities.
Yeah.
It must have had quite an impact on the local people.
Yes, oh yes. Like when I left Fort Nelson, it was in 52, they were just starting to. The BC government was just starting to let people to go and explore for oil and gas.
Mm.
Was nothing there. Philip Petroleum and ESSO were there, and for the preparation for the drilling.
Mm.
And when it's three or four years after that, didn't it? There were already 6,000 people around Fort Nelson. Even more than what they have now, I guess.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's why we had to move some church, put it more
in a better
location. Yeah. And that's why it's interesting. So there's so much that's been done and redone and moved. And it's unbelievable.
You had to be very adaptable people.
Oh, yeah, but you get to open your eyes. It's okay. We are just a native for a while, and after that, with the surge of people, and even the native would move towards the other community, and it was interesting.
What about farther north? I know there's a Catholic mission in old mission building
Old Crow,
in Old Crow.
Yes.
Do you know when that might have got going?
51.
Who would have been the minister there?
The first one was Father Billiard and Father Plain, who is in Atlin. You know Father Plain, maybe?
I know. I've heard of him. I heard that he used to visit Herschel Island.
Yes, he had some of this trip there.
Boy.
Oh, he's interesting. He's very nervous when he's telling all of those stories, but if you can make out what he says, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So when he was up in Herschel Island, would that have been, and Old Crow, that would have been about the late 40s? Or
yes, because see, he went to study the language at MacPherson.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed there. That's why he went with the RCMP to make the patrol at Herschel Island.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody in the dual line also. There's some... the only way they could reach them.
I know that some of the local people around Herschel Island point out the house where the father used to stay, so they still remember him up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were still like they were visiting also before that from the Klavik most probably, but mm-hmm. Oh, like for the plane, that's some very interesting story. Like when he came back, you see, like he. It was well cut also. You see, like, if the patrol had gone to Old Crow and then they went to Herschel Island and come back to Klavik, you see. So the, it's quite, he will explain that how the managed to get a few guys from Old Crow to take them to Herschel Island, but see that they will go in the bush, but the Eskimo, they had two guys Eskimo, but they won't go in the forest. Because they get lost in the forest. Well, the other one, the one they get to the barren land, they scare.
Yeah. See that? That's such a different territory.
Yes, and they're not accustomed to that, see?
So they would have to change guides middle of their trip.
Yeah. Like, that's why he was saying, well, even in Old Crow, nobody wanted to go. So finally, instead of having anyone, I think two or three showed up. They were traveling together and they helped each other to find the right trail, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The right creek or river to follow. And when they go further north, they don't want to come back out here. Otherwise,
out of their territory.
Yeah. But the father had an interesting story about when he came back. You see, he knew the patrol would go right away to Klavik, but he wanted to come back to it. And he had a guy from Eskimo guy there that he knew somebody in MacPherson, and he was to take him down. You see. About 30 miles, and he said when they left in the morning, there was no way of making fires or anything. And when they left there, you couldn't see a thing, and then the sun was not showing up at all, and it was just like ice fog. And a couple of times the guys went in a circle a little bit to get his bearing, and they had to come to a place. I don't know the just what he said.
Yeah.
See, there'll be a cut in the rock there where they can come down to the Mackenzie. And he said, well, even following him at a hard time because it would be blowing, and I didn't know where he was at all. So he let the dog go because he had his dog team. And he just fell off. Came out in 30 miles, there is no way of getting any bearings or anything. And he came about 100 yards from this place where he was the pass, will they?
Mm-hmm.
And he was really amazed. How did? Because even is it like for him, he couldn't even see the dog team and was all blown after he had just passed. But the other guy was keeping going. Well, it's not that way. He knew.
Oh, that's amazing.
He had a compass.
So when Father Plain and Father Bouillard went to Old Crow, that's when the building would have been put up?
Yes.
The church building?
Not long after that, because they worked on that right away.
So that was really the only mission building that they would have established, and they would have mainly been visiting people from there rather than establishing other missions.
Yes, yes, because that's the only group that were there, see, and it's always a few, like the police or the nurse would be Catholic or something like this,
mm-hmm.
and a few other, but they never made a big dent in that place.
Yeah. Do you know when the Old Crow mission was closed?
I don't know for sure.
Roughly? How many years it might have been operating?
Officially, I think it was closed only about 4 or 5 years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah. And even for the Musha is still called there sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're using it as a teacher's residence or something.
Yes,
now.
But the right now the some of the teacher there, they're asking him to. He went there not long ago, and he's supposed to make another trip before Christmas.
And what's the name of the mission in Old Crow?
Old Crow says was St. John.
St. John.
John. I don't know who was a John in those days. The bishop, because though he had called another one, his bishop was liked to call the mission. So that's why here the list I got here, that was and to go quicker with you there, I was. See, like Dawson was St. Mary's, but the first, there was another title first, and White House. See, here I got Dawson City in 97, and White House in 1901, mm-hmm. It was... Why I said, well, the dedication was in 1901. And Forsyth Kirk was also in that time, but it was revived in 1942. Atlin, the it was visited by even from... Oh, I don't know. You ready to go again?
Sure. We were talking about Atlin. You mentioned someone used to come up there to visit from Victoria?
Victoria, even. And
But they didn't build a church there until a bit later.
No, but today they were visiting the mines, too, sometimes. In the mines, they always had the... When they had a demand for to come, and as a rule, they used the dining hall and or something in those mines, because it's... Discovery and something, but in 1946 or 7, Father Alar came out there, and he was quite notorious, and he stayed quite a few years. And after that, he was the one after that visiting Carcross. He came across country to Ireland, so that was quite interesting. So what quite a few of the family, and even he had started a boarding school that didn't stay very long because...
This was in
Atlin? Atlin. It was his sister came out, but they didn't have enough funds, I guess, but quite a few, like I met some old-timers that they had gone to that school, and they still remember Father Alar just like if it was yesterday. The old... Tom Peters from Tesla and some others. They had a dozen kids, I guess. And because they were all trappers, so they.
So the building in Carcross, would that have been built around that time?
No, this it would come just in 1942, I guess. There was somebody going there regularly, so they must be around that time.
And do you know the name of the church in
Carcross? Carcross, yes, it's St. John the Baptist.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and the... So from Atlin, they were visiting the other places. So, and the... From Atlin, where do we go? Yes, oh yes, see the mission in Telegraph Creek. It's quite interesting there too, because even there it was a sanctuary of the Anglican, but at the same time there was some Catholics, and some came, even a priest came from the south also, from Victoria also to up the Stikine, and then because we discovered that many years after that, because there was no record of that in a church book, because the baptism and the wedding had been made in Telegraph Creek was recorded in the Victoria.
Oh, very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah, but see, I had the same thing on the. at Prophet River. It's on the, right now it's on the Alaska Highway, but in those days it was right in the bush. The people coming there, and they were sure they were baptized, but they was not registered in Fort St. John. But there was an old bishop, Clert, I guess, or not, no, what's the other one would be, anyway, or Pharaoh. He used to come from Athabasca, from not even the Mackenzie, on the Hudson Bay boat to Hudson Hope. And there was they go to Don Vegan, and there's some beaver Indian there, and close Mobile Lake, and they will meet them all and perform the baptism and the marriage. And there was a lady that was, she asked me for a baptismal certificate, and I said, well, I can't find them in Fort St. John, I can't find them, we don't have it in Fort Nelson. And I was arguing, and she said, I said, well, do you remember who baptized you? She said, I was 14, and I remember I was baptized. And so she told me the name of the bishop. So that this time Bishop Coudray came along. Oh, he said, I think we discover something now. He said, when I was at Resolution, there was a long list of the bishop. It was a bishop, auxiliary bishop, coming and visit those places. But he already registered the whole thing when he went back to his mission at Resolution. So I found 50 baptism there.
Amazing.
Yeah. Because you look very close for them, and they were not there. No, it's quite... when they had no facility of traveling, so they were making a trip here and there. And
the records just traveled with them.
With them.
You mentioned when we were talking over the phone that there were two churches in Carmax, that Father Bob had made one in a log cabin, and then there was a second one?
Yes, and the third one, too.
Oh! So there were these just different buildings around town that you used? Or
No. The first one was Father Bob. I built I don't know which part he built first, because it was dry logs he used, and there were the section, I think the front part was the first he had built, and he added in the back for the church, you see, for a residence, it's quite a few story about those buildings. And after that, you see, when I was there, it grew, and we had quite a few from the mine, Catholics, so the building was, it was some old logs, so it was really, really cold, and so I asked the bishop to build another one. Then we had some floods in the back. So after that, we moved the third one. So I had built the second one in the higher ground in the back, because where Father Bob had built, it just looked like in a hollow, in a hole there, and that's why it was a sperm of frost also. And so I said, well, in the back it'll be okay. So the bishop said, well, sure, build it. And that was in the 1956. That's material from McCrae. They took some old building from McCrae.
From where? McCrae?
McCrae.
Oh, yeah. I think Father Bob used a few boards from the old Savoy Hotel at Fort Selkirk when he built the first one.
He told a story
about that. So a lot of recycling.
Oh, yeah. See, the first one, even the lower post, and just at the in 44, all the building they had used for the construction of the highway, that was not in use, they were selling them. Mm-hmm. See, just to dismantle, because the officially the American were supposed to clean up their mess.
Right.
See, and so either they gave them away just for the taking them down, or cleaning up the place. So the building material was pretty cheap.
Yeah, so the church in Carmax, was it on this side of the river? Or
it was on this side of the river first, and now it moved on the other side.
So when Father Bob first built it, it was in the town site, and then it moved across the river to the Indian village?
There was no Indian village yet.
Ah.
No, because the coal mine was there.
Right.
But And while he had built, as I mentioned, the minute the water was coming up a bit, we were flooded.
Hmm.
And so I put it maybe 2 or 3 feet, 2 feet higher in the back. It seemed to be higher, really higher. And then we find out it was flooding again, so the bishop... But now, where it was all that water, the government raised all the community so high, and they use the same place, but it's permafrost underneath.
So there isn't a building left at Carmax then?
Yes, we have one across the river.
Oh, okay. And what's the name of the mission in Carmax?
St. Jude.
And that one is still visited occasionally?
Yeah, so Father Dave from Porter Creek is going there every Monday.
Oh, he goes to Pelly too.
Yes, once in a while.
So the third, okay, so you built the first one a few years after Father Bob built his, and then the third one would have been built, do you remember about when?
We moved part of the old one across.
Uh-huh.
That's in 63.
Oh.
And because they already the native didn't want their Indian village. What they had, it was about 4 miles down the river.
Mm-hmm.
Not 4 miles, about 2 miles anyway. And it was from on the river, because even where the old airport was, and it was a kind of musky house. And nobody wanted to go there. Far to go to the store and all this.
Yeah.
So finally they agreed. There was in the 50s, late 50s, they were talking about having a reserve, because most of them, they didn't want to go in the reserve any place, because they were okay. They always mixed up with the white there, and so there was no... But the Indian Department didn't want to build unless it's on the reserve. They said they couldn't get any houses, decent houses, and they said the owners, it belonged to them or on the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Even belonged to them, let's say there was a hitch too, because it have to be approved by the Northern Affair in Ottawa, saying, well, that this part will be part of the reserve, even if it's in the village. And So they agreed they will go where they are now, across the river. It was quite a story, but...
Sounds like a few struggles there.
Yes.
And in Mayo, you mentioned that someone had been visiting since the early days from Dawson.
Yes.
Do you know when the church actually was erected there?
In 30... Let's see, where's Mayo? Where's Mayo? 38, 37, yeah. The 37, 38. And the Church is Christ the King. And then they built at El Sal, they had also a church at Kino, and even Calumet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, see, at the mine, there was three villages.
Mm-hmm.
And United Kino had bought most of them, but even with the... Calumet, they were operating at El Sa, and Calumet, where they were mining at Calumet.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the bunkhouses there, and on all of the, even the store.
Mm-hmm.
So finally they said, well, it's not practical, because the people can always move down, and they built more on El Sa, and so Calumet came down.
Oh, so the Calumet one is no longer standing then?
No, the Calumet, they took it down to Elsa for a residence.
Oh, so do you know when the two churches in Kino and Calumet would have gone up?
The one at Kino was It's an old log cabin. And it was there all in the 30, just after the famous mine there, Wanakee mine started there.
Oh, yeah.
And the house is still there, still standing there, but we don't use it. But after that, the bishop had bought the school at Keno. Mm-hmm. And that was the... So they discontinued the service and they had the old log cabin. Mm-hmm. And do you know what happened with Keno? The old school in Keno? Because Keno had gone down again. It was up and down in Keno.
Yeah.
And in 69, they moved it to Faro for the first church there.
Oh. They took the Catholic school from Keno and brought it to Faro.
Yeah, that was the church there. And then,
That was the first part. Yeah, and then there's still a church building there that's now being used as a residence, I think. Yeah. Huh. So they would have left Keno about when?
Keno, the little church is still there. The building, there's even a fight about it. Now they don't know who
it is. The squatters, in the mine, yeah.
And but that was the old church. This one was the old church. Hmm. And then when they used the school for 4 or 5 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little more than that. And finally they moved it to Faro in 69. So it's interesting. And in Mayo, the old church, the church in Mayo was a church that was in Dawson, or the Dominion, or one of those creek.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was rebuilt there in 37.
I know there was a church in, I think it was Grand Forks. I think Father Bob said there was a church there at one time. But
in the early part of the century, there are 4, 5, 6 churches in Dawson.
Just around the Klondike Valley.
Dominion and all this.
Hmm. Something that I've never quite understood when people first came to Dawson, it was the Jesuits mainly who were establishing the church. And did they stay on in Dawson, or at what point did they leave and the Oblates?
No, they were not in there in Canada. They were in Alaska then.
Oh, I see.
And so that there was a division of Tabasa McKenzie and all this. I see.
Ah.
And they worshipped out. In fact, Father Judge was the only one who came there regularly. Mm-hmm. His superior came too, but in around Dawson there was they had newspaper, Catholic newspaper there in those days.
Really? I never heard about that.
Oh, yeah. Father Morris said that it's too bad we lost lots of the, I think back in Dawson they could have kept all the, for 4 or 5 years. And it's interesting. I don't know where I put it. I had a few notes on there. I don't think I'd put it here. But see, for Mayo, after that, the old district developed with the mine, and finally it came down, or that this even all the mines are closed, and there's hardly any activity there. And even Mayo to me, they should have been moved as a village long ago. I used to laugh because from Carmack's, nearly every month for a while I was visiting the other priest there at Mayo. So was there in the battle when they had the floods and things like this.
Oh,
and,
really?
And there was nothing to hold on Laos. It was a landing. It was open for a landing. They were bringing the mineral from the mine,
mm-hmm.
concentrate from the mine, and put it on the boat from there. So that was just a landing place. But some few old timers, they had a piece of land, and they see all the value going down if they close and all this. And after the first flood, I don't remember the years, but the first flood and the second flood, when they put the dikes,
yeah,
you see, there was nothing that value there. The hospital was not there. The RCMP had just a log cabin, and there was nothing. And lots of people, they want them to move about 12 miles from there, close to the little lake on the higher ground, or at the turn off of the mine to Keno.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been a nice place. It's high and all this.
Yeah.
And those old timers, they didn't want to give up. So they started to build a hospital. There's millions here, the liquor store, and a million there. And after that, they couldn't do it.
They were stuck there.
And now, I don't know. There's not, I don't think there's much happening in Mayo.
I'm trying to think of, I think we've talked about most of the church buildings. Do you know when the church in Champaign would have been abandoned? Or
no.
How long that was operating?
Oh, it would be, see, that's 47. As long as Father Marks that was there, I think up to nearly 60, that was doing pretty good. They were using
oh.
it, yeah.
And what was the name of the Champaign Church?
Here in this, you know, that's probably, it was sent by Bishop Coudet in 1947, the mission of St. John the Evangelist was completed at Champaign. So the other one, I think.
So that one would normally have been just a small building that
yeah.
would have been visited periodically from the church,
yes,
from Burwash,
yes,
or
yes,
Haines
from
Junction.
Burwash. Yeah, it seemed like he had this cycle, this circle there, and see like the first and the second. The first, he'll be in Burwash, and then he will go to Snag, and then the second, and after he'll come back to Ishiak, and at the same time he go to Champaign on his way to White Arts, and the next month, it's once a month. And,
yeah.
Or sometimes it's 2 or 3 days, and that was a visit at the.
You mentioned also that they went to Asia. Would there have been a church building there as
yes,
well?
Yes, yeah. Oh. There was a, what they call the mission there.
Yeah, so probably a one-room cabin, one or two-room cabin.
Yeah, it's because sometimes they had quite a few working around there. They had the radio station there too, you see. And even at times, they were visited from here, from one day. If Father couldn't go over there, they would be flying, see what they fly supply there.
Oh, yes.
They'd be flying from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the area where we didn't talk too much is around Cassia, but see, that was, I started from the lower post, and when the mine opened. It's a nice church in Cassia since 1954. And East Coot Lake moved back to their own village in 63. So they are on the new highway there.
Oh, yeah.
But the other one, I think we mentioned them all.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There was nothing new after that. It was just coming back to nature, I guess.
Like a lot of old buildings in the Yukon. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Okay. This is secondary posts. It seems like how many secondary posts we had. like Alpelli Yard became a residence and a new church. With the new church, it served the two chapels of Watson Lake, St. Peter's and St. Anne. Then the secondary posts were subsequently established at the injunction Snag, Ishiak, Kluchu, Fontas, Canada, Francois, Calivet, and Bear Creek. I like the Bear Creek.
Oh, Bear Creek?
Yeah, we used to see nice day. I was in Dawson and for 6 months in 1954. And I used to see nice in there, Bear Creek.
Hmm. Yeah. So did they have a building at Bear Creek?
Each with his own chapel.
Oh! So when would the Bear Creek one have been established about?
Oh, it was there in 54, I think they, when they closed the mine after that, they closed down. It was, I think they went a little bit, maybe they move it to another place.
Hmm.
Because there's always some group coming out. And,
yeah.
Well, it's quite interesting. You know, this one was the Bishop Coudert died in 65, and that's, he had sent that to Rome just in that year, 65.
Oh, I see. So this was...
And nobody hardly knew about this one, and I found that out. I said, well, that's something to preserve.
Oh, yes. So this is kind of a history of his...
Yes, it's his, a summary of what's...
Yeah, that's an important document.
Yeah, this one was the kind of newsletter they were sending to us from Rome, you see. So, the bishop died in Rome in 65 in November, and that was on the issue of November 65.
Oh. So from the Vatican newsletter.
It's not exactly a Vatican, it was from the old lady's headquarters.
I see.
Yeah. But you get a good summary in there, though. Pretty good. You followed me, I said, well, I should find this one. And in the last few years, I went to Porto Creek a couple of times, and stayed there for a year and a half or so, and moving here, moving there. I said, where did I put this?
You should put it in your archives, or donate a copy to Yukon Archives.
Yeah, but I may use it one day.
When you write your memoirs. Okay, well, I'll end this formal interview. Thank you very much.